Hey, folks, thanks for listening. This is Eric Mann. You're listening to Voices from the Frontlines, the 4 o'clock Public Affairs Hour. And now we have on Larry Burns, the director of the Council on Hemispheric Affairs, and he's talking about our friend John Negroponte. Latin America's real Mr. Danger arrives in a new avatar. Larry, how you doing?
Hi.
Well, listen, I've been reading, you know, the one thing about being on this show is you actually have to read something, so, and be prepared. So I've been reading several of your articles from the Council of Hemispheric Affairs. Tell us about exactly who is John Negroponte, what's his position, and what do you see as the danger to progressive movements in Latin America?
Well, John Negroponte is a career Foreign Service officer, but he's very much more than just that. He is exquisitely educated at all of the elite schools of the United States and Europe. He came from an extremely wealthy family, and he married the daughter of, I guess it was ICI, the British Chemical Corporation. It was considered to be a dazzling marriage. And he began his elegant career. One of his early appointments, of course, was in, I guess, Cambodia. He was a kind of, he caught the eye of Henry Kissinger at that time, and he had a very quick ascent in terms of his career. He became ambassador to Honduras in the 1980s, early 80s. This was a time that the United States was becoming increasingly involved in the Contra War, and Honduras, which is adjacent to Nicaragua, was used as an unsinkable aircraft carrier by the United States to supply the Contras who were invading Nicaragua in order to get rid of Daniel Ortega. And Honduras increasingly became mobilized to be in this war. And one of the things that began to happen were the executions, the summary executions of maybe 180 Honduran patriots who resented the fact that their country was being used as a sort of a base to attack another country. And when people would come to speak to Ambassador Negroponte and that their loved ones had disappeared, he would mock this. He would deprecate any reference to the fact that human rights violations were taking place in Honduras. Later on, when he appeared before the Senate confirmation hearings, when he was appointed to be ambassador to the UN and other appointments, Senator Dodd and Senator Leahy would bring up some reference to Negroponte's Honduran embassy and the human rights violations that were sanctioned by that embassy during this period, and the enormous bribes that were paid to Honduran military officials to allow U.S. installations to be based in Honduras. He would constantly say, well, I have no memory of that, and he would sort of use some type of dismissive language to a kind of selective amnesia for anything that were referred to the complicity of the United States in the rise of this death squad in Honduras.
Larry, let me go ahead. We're on with Larry Burns, the director of the Council on Hemispheric Affairs. I mean, one of the things in reading several of your articles is, well, let's get to Negroponte now. He's going to be, is correct, Assistant Secretary of State? Is that
yes,
correct?
Well, he is the number two man.
Right.
He is right after after Rice, Secretary of State Rice. And to show you how much this job means to him, he gave up one of the biggest jobs in Washington to take a lesser post. And but in that lesser post, he is going to be, he's very strategically placed. First of all, he has really caught George Bush's eye, just as his father was very pro Negroponte, and Negroponte has benefited from his relationship with the Bushes. In this position, he already has stated that that there are two portfolios that are of greatest concern to him, which would be the Asian and the Latin American portfolios. Since Latin America is a very weak link in the administration's foreign policy, and since it's the administration's poor working of Latin American policy has been a subject of open discussion, and the administration is very embarrassed by the fact that this is probably the most disastrous Latin American policy that any U.S. administration has fielded in many years.
Let me disagree with that. I don't think it's a disastrous Latin American policy. I think there's, first of all, there's been one Latin American policy since the Monroe Doctrine. And in looking at your actual, like, for instance, if you look at Thomas, is it Thomas Dodds from Connecticut?
Yeah.
Is that his name?
Christopher Dodds. Actually, Thomas Dodd is his father.
I'm sorry, that's
who
right.
Who is also a senator.
Right. Now, Chris Dodd is a pretty good guy. He's certainly been trying to look at the issue of torture in Latin America and stuff like that. But do you really believe, first of all, that the Bush administration has a bad policy in Latin America, or is it simply because it's overextended in Iraq and Iran, that it's allowing certain things to happen that it would like to stop if it could? The second question is, where in the world is there any democratic support for self-determination, Democratic Party support for Hugo Chavez, for self-determination? What would really differ if the Democrats were in power towards Latin America? So let's take one at a time.
Unfortunately, I think what you say is a lot of merit. For Nancy Pelosi, Chavez is, quote, a thug. And the descriptions that have been used is that the Democrats don't have a good feel for Latin America. And there is a small group of congressmen, one of them being William Delahunt, a marvelous congressman from the Boston area, who was very instrumental in getting that Citgo oil into poor neighborhoods into Boston.
Which is the Venezuelan oil company.
Yes, Citgo is the state-owned, is a subsidiary of the state-owned company. Well, what we have here is this. We have to speak incrementally, because if we go down another path, there's going to be too much to say. But surely the threat of what Chavez is doing, which is precisely what President Allende in Chile tried to do,
right,
which is to put together a socialist economic system, made it to a constitutional democratic system, with a high degree of self-expression and societal participation. Now, this kind of model is the exact opposite the model of which the administration conforms to. It is true that due to the distraction provided by Iraq, this allowed Latin America, many Latin American countries, to practice a different kind of globalization than the Bush administration had in mind. They were making trips to far-off countries that they never visited before, and they signed agreements, and they negotiated some amazing arrangements. For example, the South-South arrangement put together by India, South Africa, and Brazil. This organization is being staffed. It has its secretariat, and it's going to be a very important trade model. Now, all of this is happening very fast, and it's clearly out of control of the State Department. Now, right now, the Assistant Secretary of Inter-American Affairs is a man named Thomas Shannon. He and Ambassador William Brownfield, starting a number of weeks ago, initiated a very interesting campaign to engage in constructive dialogue with Venezuela. Now, Chavez turned down this offer. I don't know whether that was a wise move or not, but what I do know is that may be the last kind of humane initiative that this administration is going to take, because clearly Negroponte, as the number two man in the State Department, and the person who, during the Senate confirmation hearings, he spoke very directly on the Chavez issue, and in a much harsher tone.
Larry, again, I'm going to try to tighten it up a little bit, okay? This is Eric Mill with Larry Burns, the Director of Council on Hemispheric Affairs. I think you've made a very good case that, look, we understand the basic situation is that the United States government, and not just the Bush administration, feels that there's been far too much left-wing growth in Latin America. There's been an understanding that it's considered a less strategic area than the Middle East. There's now an understanding that an adaptation must be made, that certainly Latin America is too important to be allowed to move in the direction. You have some very good quotes from your organization about how now we've now eliminated the United States government is now against communism, it's against terrorism, it's against socialism. There's now these enemies called insurgents, also an insurgents in Iraq is a new word, and now populism is a bad word in Latin America. But here's my question. We could not really have expected the United States to neglect Latin America for too long. We could not have really expected that the United States would not send a Negroponte, a neo-fascist, a person who supports torture, as most of them do, to Latin America. The question is, can the United States carry out what it wants just because it sends a really, really bad man back to head up to Latin American affairs? Let's talk about Latin America resistance, because otherwise it just sounds like Negroponte's coming, he's going to be terrible, uh-oh, the period of U.S. neglect is over. So I think, yes, they are going to move to topple governments. They are going to move to overthrow Chavez if they can. Evo Morales, you know, they're going to do everything they can. Evo Morales, the question is, what are the Latin American governments going to do to prevent U.S. and CIA intervention and overthrowing of the governments, as happened in Honduras and happened in Nicaragua and as happened, as you pointed out, in Chile? What is the possibility of the resistance?
I don't think we're in the resistance mode at this point. The one country that is kind of a mobilized state and is Venezuela.
That's correct.
And there's a rather big gap after Venezuela with Evo Morales in Bolivia and Rafael Correa in Ecuador. Then all of these countries together are known as the pink tide governments. That is, governments that really are no more leftist than New Deal reformism was. But in terms of the Latin American political evolution, certainly are different kinds of governments than have been around there before. These countries, the one new addition is that I happen to have been in Chile at the time of the coup. I was with the UN, and I just remember the absolute desperation that Allende was trying to get appropriations out of the Chilean legislature in order to effectively govern the country. But the legislature was controlled by the opposition, and they voted down every tax increase and social program that came along. What has happened is that Chavez has really put his money where his mouth is and has become the primary lender in Latin America and certainly the primary energizer of various projects. And so, in fact, the IMF is playing a dependent role to Chavez in terms of the magnitude of the programs being conceptualized by Chavez and his amazing ability to conceptualize these big economic projects that hit at the vitals of where the sort of Latin America's destiny is at. Now the question is, I mean, I buy your analysis that the United States never before would allow a errant Latin America to go its own way in terms of social experimentation and so forth. Why would it go now? Why would it change now? Well, there are interesting trends taking place there. First of all,
Larry, I'm very sorry that I'm going to have to actually. This was really only a beginning. You have a very good feel for the area. We could have done a whole hour on it. I've read a lot of the stuff from the Council on Hemispheric Affairs. Tell us how people can get in touch with you and read in more detail some of the things you're writing, because I have a couple of quick announcements to make before we go off the air.
Okay, I'll do that quickly. We have a sort of vast intern corps of around 30 interns that come from all over the world, and we put out research studies almost every day. We have a website, which is at coha.org, coha.org.
And a phone?
Phone 202-223-4975. That's 202, as Amy Goodman would say, 202-223-4975.
Thank you, Larry. This was great.
Thank you, Eric. It's been a great pleasure.
Okay, and we'll talk again.
Okay, bye-bye.
Now, there's a couple of last things that I wanted to talk about in the last 2 minutes, and I just want to thank Alan Minsky for giving me this terrible news. The comic strip La Cucaracha was cut from the LA Times as of today, without so much of an explanation. The author and artist of the strip, Lalo Alcaraz, is asking fans of the strip to either email or call the Times. The email address is readers.rep@latimes.com. readers.rep@latimes.com. The phone number, I'm assuming, at the Times, is 877-544-5544-4000. Just a couple of very quick comments. Many of you know Larry Aubrey, the very progressive black commentator, and his daughter, Erin Aubrey Kaplan. She was at the LA Times. I was just talking to her the other day. They let her go. So Erin Aubrey Kaplan is no longer at the Times. The Times has turned into, in our opinion, they should change their name to the LA Villaraigosa, because it's literally becoming a front for Villaraigosa Kisses a Baby. Villaraigosa supports the expansion of the 405. La Cucaracha is one of the most progressive Latino comics and commentators, so I'm going to read it again. The comic strip La Cucaracha was cut from the LA Times as of today, without so much as an explanation. So you must support Lalo Alcaraz and the call readers.rep@latimes.com. Call the Times, 877-554-4000, and we need to have a conference about the suppression of rights inside LA and the reactionary role of the LA Times. Okay, that ends the program of Voices from the Front Lines. This is Eric Mann. I'd like to thank our guests, and they're really good guests, Maisie Chin, Gregory Keeley, and Larry Burns. To the end, we had a lot of good music. We'd like to thank our producer, Alan Minsky, our production organizer, Lisa Adler, and our engineers, Tanika Zolke. And we'll see you next week with Voices from the Frontline. Up next is Beneath the Surface with Susie Wiseman. La Cucaracha will win in the long run. Hang in there, folks.